Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Thank you guys for coming back for part two of episode one, The Why with Dwayne Wade. This is the second half of an incredible sit down with three of the greatest basketball players of all time, Pau Gasol, Tony Parker, and Dirk Nowitzki. We're speaking just one day before we all get inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame together. We're talking about our road to the Hall of Fame and how we all intervened in each other's role and path, but all ended up here together. So coming up in part two, we will talk about becoming leaders in the league. The first purchases we made with our NBA checks. We pop some of my new wine. We celebrate. But first, it starts off very emotional for each and every last one of us in different ways because of the time that we spent, the opportunities that we had to compete against, to compete with, also to get a chance to get to know one of the greats in Kobe Bryant. Pau?
Yep. What you got?
You pass this over, yes. Pau. When you look at this photo, what does this photo mean to you? What is this photo expressing? What does it say?
Yeah, it was a photo with Kobe. You know, I think it looks like it was when we won our first championship against Orlando. You know, it's great partnership, great relationship. You know, kind of two players that got on the same page and shared some amazing stuff on and off the floor. He's a unique person, unique teammate. It definitely took me to another level. Showed me, what greatness looks like, and the seriousness of his approach to the game. A moment of joy after losing the 08 finals is against the Celtics. Winning 09 was sweet. It was my first championship. It was his first championship without Shaq, with all that stuff.
Meaningful.
It was very meaningful to him. That's why I was traded to the Lakers. To help him and that team do that.
So Kobe, I would love if we all could just, before we finish, take a moment and talk about, someone that we all obviously admired as a player, person. Tony, I heard that he learned French, right? It's a story out there that he learned French to be able to...
Yeah, he was talking trash to French.
I mean, not learn, but that's crazy, right?
When I got drafted, all the Spurs talked about is, how we have to beat the Lakers, you know? So it was a huge Spurs-Lakers rivalry when I first arrived to the Spurs because they were on their way to do a three-peat. And so my rookie year, we played the Lakers in the summer finals. And so I played well in that series, you know? And Kobe spoke Italian, as you know. Mm-hmm. And so he said some stuff, but it was like not really good. And I said, man, you don't even talk French, you know? And so the year after, we played him again, you know, in the playoffs.
Wow.
And he was talking straight trash to me in French.
Wow. Know?
And I was like, man, you learn French that fast. So I was like, okay. I was like, and because they used to put Kobe on me, you know, to guard me.
Yeah.
And so that's why they were like always talking trash. And he just loved like talking other language, I guess the way that he was raised. And I was always amazed. He was obviously one of the best players in our league, the closest to MJ, who's for me is the GOAT. And so Kobe was just unbelievable. Like the years that we played against them, and it was at the Dome. Huh? So at the Dome, it was like 38,000 people. It was packed. And we had more people for the Lakers than the Spurs.
That was us too.
I felt like we were playing on the road like at the Dome. Like it was so many Kobe
Lakers
jerseys.
Fans travel.
Oh, Laker fans, man, they travel.
Yeah.
They're like die-hard fans. Like, and so always had a good relationship with him because of that. And I will always keep obviously unbelievable memories when I did when I retired, you know, and I did my Netflix. Kobe accepted to do an interview, and it was one of his last interviews, you know, before he passed. And so that's why I dedicate, you know, my movie in memory of him because of the relationship that we had. And it's funny, he always send me texts like at the right moment, like always like stay in touch. And we were in China in 2019. We were at the World Cup and we was like watching the games and we were talking about what we were going to do with women's basketball. I own a women's team, you know, in France, and you know, he was big, you know, with his daughter in women's basketball. And he was telling me all the stuff he wanted to do, that we were going to partner and do some stuff in the WNBA. And so, yeah, definitely going to miss him, obviously. And he was just, like you said, an unbelievable and unique person.
Yeah. I remember when I first came in the league as a two guard, and for me, it was Kobe was the bar. He was the greatest player in the game. To me, he was, you know, he played the same position. And so for me, I needed that respect from Kobe more so than anybody else in the league. If I got the respect from Kobe, I feel like I've made it. And I remember the first times, first couple of times we played him, Kobe guarded me like, you know, four people removed on the screen because I wasn't a shooter. Right? And I remember after that first game, I was like, my goal is to make sure that Kobe respects me. And so, like, a lot of my work throughout the summers was to get better so Kobe can pick me up and really respect me. Mm-hmm. And so the next time we played him, I hit a couple shots on pull-ups because he was going for people removing. He was like, oh, okay, you worked on that, right? Like, he was talking. He's like, oh, you worked on it. And then it was at one point throughout that year where I grabbed the ball and he was grabbing me 94 feet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, chest poke. I didn't care what happened with the outcome. I got the respect of Kobe. And so it meant so much for me to work on my game, to get to the place where someone like him that I admire so much from, you know, all his abilities, but like for him to respect me as an equal, you know, mm-hmm. in the game. Mm-hmm. And I would obviously never forget that, you know, because as a young player coming in, like you have that guy who is your guy that's playing. And he was that guy that was playing for me. And so I got his respect and I told everybody. Like, Kobe picked me up 94 feet. I'm like, what? Why is that a thing? But to me, it meant something because then he knew that, you know, he couldn't let me come down and get comfortable or come and get into the ball screens because it was going to be hectic mm-hmm. on the other end. And so that was respect.
What did you think when he hit that bank shot on you at the buzzer?
You know what? I was mad at Mario Chalmers, first of all. I was mad at Mario Chalmers because we were up five. Before that, and Mario helped too much on his down screen with Derek Fisher, and Derek Fisher popped and got the three, mm-hmm. right? So I'm like, or maybe we was up four, and then we was down mm-hmm. one. Then I had to go to the line, mm-hmm. and I may want to miss one. So now we up two. He put the pressure on me in L.A. I didn't come through and hit both. And we denied him the whole time. I was like, listen, don't let Kobe get the ball. Anybody else can shoot. Right. Kobe juke UD. Hit him with one. And he got the ball. And I was like, all right, time it. I got the clock in my mind. I'm like, all right, 3, 2, a little fumble. I'm like, oh, I got him now. And then he threw up this shot. I was like, yeah, that ain't going in. And it was the slowest shot in the history. It took an hour for that ball. And I was just watching as he shot. And I said, that's going in. And when it banked and it went in, I couldn't even be mad because it was Kobe Bryant. Like, it's a video of when I walked to the back afterwards. Kobe was waiting on me. Matt, that's the only time Kobe ever waited on me after the game. He was positioned very well after the game. And I had to walk past and I was hot. And I was like, only you. You're the only person that I can't get that mad at. I couldn't tear up the locker room because I was like, it's Kobe. It's like, Kobe. And so I really went that pissed. Yeah. I was just mad at Mario for doing the dumb defensive thing. Before, yeah, we wouldn't have to. Kobe wouldn't have to make that shot if you would have did your job. Mm. So,
yeah, I've had huge respect over Kobe. I think, you know, I played against Jordan, it was my goal, but he came back in Washington at the end. He was obviously older. He was still amazing, but I think Kobe was the best player that I've ever played against. And I think we played him in L.A. I always tell that story. You weren't in L.A. yet. I think this must have been 06, 07. He outscored our entire Mavs team by himself. I think we had 61 or 62, and he had 63. I mean, we threw everything at us, double teamed, triple teamed him. I mean, one time he was caught in the corner, and the shot clock was going down, and we had like one guy up on the top shoulder, so he just said, "What?" Turned around, shot that thing with the left. Draws, and I was like,
with the left.
This guy is on something else. I mean, he was going 1-on-4 in the break, throwing stuff up, and then I said, he didn't play in the fourth quarter because they were obviously up 20-something, and I said he could have easily scored 80, and then 2 or 3 weeks later he scored 81 on Toronto. He was on a scoring spree that I'd never seen before ever from anyone, and he was just incredible. The athleticism, the killer instinct, the shot making, the skill level. I mean, he was a complete package, and he was I was a huge Kobe fan.
Yeah, he was the guy. Shifting gears a little bit. So we all came into the NBA with one role, and then at some point that role changed. Do you guys remember the moment your role changed in this league where you went from this to the responsibilities that you had? Do y'all remember that moment?
Yeah. When I first arrived, I had no expectation. So I didn't know what to expect. I just wanted to be in the NBA. I was happy with that. So it was like everything was like bonus for me. And I will always remember, we were the fifth game into the season, and Pop calls me in the back of the plane, and he's like, "Tomorrow you're starting." And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "You're starting tomorrow."
Five games in.
So we only did the preseason, and I'm 19 years old, played 10, 15 minutes in the preseason, you know? And he said, "You're starting. I'm not going to waste any time. You're starting." And I'm like, "Did you talk to Timmy?" because I was scared of Timmy, you know? I was like, I will talk about it on my speech, you know, tomorrow. But I was like, yeah. I was like, "Did you talk to Timmy?" Because the starting point guard at the time was Antonio Daniels.
And they were close.
It was very close. It was Timmy's buddy.
Yeah.
So I was like, "Did you talk to Timmy?"
"Timmy okay with this?"
And Pop like, "Timmy will be fine." And I'm like, "No, Pop, did you talk to Timmy?" It's like, I don't want to have the franchise, you know, be mad or create problems, you know? And so, yeah, it came real fast. The responsibility to be the starting point guard. And you have Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Steve Smith, Bruce Bowen. You know, they were all veterans, all 30 years and stuff like that. And me, I'm 19. And I have to tell Timmy and David, you know, where to go. And I'm like, "Yeah, just right here, David. It's okay."
It's okay.
Just right move here. Over. Move over just, a little
just,
bit.
No disrespect to Robinson. Just right here. Yeah. And slowly but surely, I was growing and getting more and more responsibilities. Yeah.
Pal, when did it change?
I mean, for me, you know, when I came in, I was the third pick of the draft. At the time, it was the highest for a European player. Yeah. So there was a lot of expectation. I joined a franchise that just moved to Memphis from Vancouver. So there was as much as there weren't expectations for us as a team, I actually had higher expectations. I thought, you know, it was tough for me to lose more games in a week that I had lost in the previous season. You know, I was looking around like, what the fuck is going on? But anyway, but then I was obviously I felt that pressure a little bit at the beginning. I was coming off the bench. Stromile Swift was the starting power forward of that team. He was number two pick a year before. So they had to also, you know, trust that would develop and stuff. But then game four, we're in Phoenix and Stromile sprains his ankle at shoot around, which, you know, I've never really seen a sprained ankle at shoot around, but it happened. And then all of a sudden, wow, you're starting. I went from being really tense and tentative on the court to just say, hey, you're going to play 30 plus minutes and go out there and just go and play and just be aggressive, make mistakes. Who cares? And now we're going to probably lose anyway. You know, so it's the worst that can happen. You know, so I had, you know, I remember having, you know, 27 points, 12, 14 rebounds, whatever it was. I don't remember. Well, and then all of a sudden, I never looked back. So that moment was important. And obviously, when I got traded to the Lakers, that was a big shifting moment in my career, going from, you know, a franchise that was trying to still figure things out, that we got some competitive years, but then Michael Heisler at the time wanted to sell the team, so he kind of froze all moves, got rid of Shane, sent him to Houston for Rudy Gay, for a young up-and-coming player. You know, every rebuild, I'm like, oh, jeez, this is
going to
be tough.
Jay Will
was there.
And he came to Miami?
Jay Will, Mike Miller, yep. James Posey, they all went to Miami, helped you guys win some championships, which is great for you. But, you know, for me, it was like, okay, This is tough. You know, I'm ready for the next jump, for the next chapter, for the next level. Yeah. And in 2008, you know, that opportunity came, and obviously, that was a big moment, shifting moment in my career.
Yeah. Dirk, when did it change?
Well, I think my first year was super hard. You know, there was I'm older than all you guys, so I came in 98-99 lockout. We only had 50 games, and I never really got comfortable the entire year. We had like five or six games in 1 week. I'm like, where am I? So that was a kind of a wasted year. And then I would say my second year, we had a power forward named Gary Trent, and he was starter, and I was coming off the bench. And that year in training camp, Gary Trent tore his hamstring. So he's like, he's probably going to be out all year. And so I was really the only tall guy left on the roster. So they're like, I was really, because in my first year, I was more playing a small forward because I was very weak. Obviously, I was skinny. I couldn't really guard the fours. And so Nelly came up to me and was like, you're going to play the four, but we need to develop somehow something you can guard these guys. So my deal was front the guys. As soon as somebody crossed our three-point line or at least the free throw line, I would just get around them and stand in front of them, like, lob me, here comes Sean Bradley, you know, use his length or whoever. And so that's how I try to be effective. I was fronting on defense and on offense. I was able to then obviously spread the floor for the guys, and that helped us tremendously. So my year two was sort of a breakthrough year. But then we still have had Steve and Mike, who are great friends, great mentors of mine. They were the best players there. So, you know, down the end of the games, I would always, you know, defer to them, Mike was our leader, let Mike take a shot. Then Steve was getting better. And then, you know, Steve left for Phoenix. And then I was like, okay, I'll still have Mike. The following year, Mike went to the Spurs. And so all of a sudden, people are looking at me like, oh, you got the max contract. You're the best player. So now all of a sudden you got to be the leader. Now you get the ball at the end, and it took me a second. You know, it's not as easy. It's just okay. Just now I got the ball. I had to experience this a couple times, go through tough times, miss a couple game winners, and learn from it. So that was all of a sudden the moment where everybody just looking at me, and now you got to be our leader. And I wasn't really a born type leader. You know, I'm not really a vocal guy. So I try to find my own way of leading these guys and find my own way of leadership. So that was a little transition period that was actually pretty hard for me around 04, 05, before I figured things out. So that was another big shift in my career.
I would say for me, probably was my rookie year in the playoffs. You know, Lamar against Charlotte. So my rookie year, Eddie Jones, you guys know Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones was starting two guard. We brought Lamar Odom in from the Clippers. That was LO. That was the coolest dude in the NBA. And it was his team. Right? We maxed him out. Like, you know, we was like, we're building around Lamar. And we also had Caron Butler, who was like, you know, second, I believe, in like rookie of the year before. And so I just was like supposed to get those guys the ball and cut through and get out the way. That's all Stan had me doing. And then in the playoffs, game one, he decided to drop a game winner play and give me the ball. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, what? In my mind, I'm like, what? He about to give me the ball? With all these guys on the court, you going to give it to me? I've been practicing this my whole life. Okay. But at that moment, after that game, the responsibility shift to, well, you're the go-to
guy. Do you know
guy.
Why he did that? Why did he draw the play for you?
I think he talked about, he felt that I was the best one for the moment.
He liked what he saw.
Yeah, I mean, over the course of a season.
For that moment.
He thought I was the one. And also, too, like, he wanted to get penetration. Mm. You know, he wanted the ball in my hand to be able to do that. But he believed in me. And I'm not saying nobody believed in me before that. Of course they did. But, like, I'm looking at him, I'm like, Eddie's right here. He got $90 million. Lamar's right here, you know, and I'm the rookie. And, you know, obviously I was ready for the moment, but just the responsibilities right after that, like, it shifted. And I can't say I was prepared for it. Like, I wasn't, like you, I was very quiet. I was very shy. I wasn't a leader. But when you do stuff like that, now you become the guy. You become the leader. And I'm like, how am I going to tell Eddie Jones and Lamar Odom and these guys what to do? But just because I hit a shot, immediately it all became, he's the guy. Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. that I had to deal with, and I dealt with it silently because I was a very quiet guy. But that was the moment for me where things started shifting and it changed from what I was used to.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings, that frustrating thing your mom does, or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Wade today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Wade.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Tony, first check in America. Y'all have seen rookies come in. They get a little money. They're going to buy chains. They're going to buy the cars. They're going to have all the... What was your first thing you did when you got your first bag?
When I got my first check, and decided to buy a house. That was my first...
That's respectful and responsible. Look at you.
I just bought a house.
Look at you.
But you know why? Well, I did that because we never had a home, though. So it was like very important to me to have a place where I can have my whole family come. And so for me, that was my first thing, just buy a house.
Buy a house,
first
right
thing then. I did, yeah. First thing I did.
Pal?
Yeah, I think similar. You know, when we got to Memphis, my first paycheck was before FC Barcelona, but I guess the bigger one. I guess since we figured out we were going to be there for a few years, my parents moved with me to Memphis. My brothers came as well, which was a big deal for me, you know, being comfortable and adjusting quicker. We looked for a house after having lived the entire season in an apartment, renting in a three-bedroom apartment. Because that was already kind of an upgrade from where we grew up, kind of thing, and we bought a nice house close by, and we were happy. We felt like we had a mansion, you know. it was great, and that was the thing. But didn't do anything else really. We grew up humbly and kind of taking care of every penny and. Not leaving stuff on the plate and, you know, just appreciating what we had, the fortune, the opportunities, being able to go to school and get an education and play sports and all that stuff. And our parents work hard. So it was a way of respecting that. I think that's why we're well off today.
Did you spend any money? No.
Actually, my first year was a lockout year, and so I come there in like middle of January. So I was just like you, I was renting something, and I knew basically as soon as the season was over, I was going to go back home. So I knew I was going to be there for like 2.5 months. I'm like, I didn't even buy a car. So with my first paycheck, I didn't do anything. I rented a car for those 2.5 months. And every time I drove up to the plane or the hotel, the boys were just killing me. And as I fold out of my little rental joint, it was comical. And then, but I made it through obviously those 2.5 months. And literally the first plane after the season, I was going back home. And then when I came back the second year, I had a full training camp. I felt better. And then I actually ended up buying a car. That was probably my first big purchase. And I bought an E-Class Mercedes instead of the S-Class, of course, which is smaller. So I drove up in my E-Class. I'm all proud. They're like, what? You bought an E-Class? And so I did it wrong again. First they had a rental, then I bought the wrong one. I was like, I can't win here, guys. So I just, I rocked my E-Class for a couple of years, and then I upgraded later on. But yeah, the car was mine. What about you?
So mine was this blue Escalade that I wanted. It was an electric blue. I wanted it so bad. When I was in college, I was like, if I get some money, I'm getting that blue Escalade. So the first thing I did was go buy the blue Escalade. But the next thing I did that made me feel good about myself was my mom was just getting back to, like, my mom was spent some time in penitentiary, and my mom was just getting back to life. And I couldn't buy a house because, you know, she's never lived in a house before, and she's getting out of the penitentiary. I can't do that. But I was able to buy my mom an apartment, and I was able to set her up and put her up and, you know, and for a kid, you know, like myself, I just wanted to, you know, you want to give your mom and your parents and everyone, you want to give them the world. And for me at the time, that was the world, that I was able to provide a safe haven, a place for her, you know, because she had a tough road. You know, she had a tough life. And I felt good being, you know, 21 years old and being able to be like, Ma, here go your keys.
That's cool.
You know? And so yeah. that was my big splurge. But that blue Escalade was the first thing I got. I rolled off the lot with that joint. Like, oh, I can't wait to show the homies this one.
That's right.
Toughest fan base that you played against. Toughest fan base.
That I played against? I guess, you know, Sixers, Celtics, probably were the toughest ones.
Sixers.
You know? Yeah, East Coast, Philly, yeah. You know, they get a little rowdy.
Yeah.
They get a little extra.
They get a little extra.
A little disrespectful. Yeah, but, you know, and that was, you know, and that sometimes that just fuels you. I mean, it's kind of, you know, obviously there are limits. And we try to set boundaries in sports, which it should be a family-friendly place, no matter how competitive and how exciting it gets. But yeah, that was, you know, seeing this guy, people going crazy and talking so much trash, like, all right, unnecessary, but unnecessary, you know,
like this
and,
is America.
And I didn't have kids either. You know, and I came from Europe, you know, they're passionate. They go crazy. They throw stuff. They, you know, I've ran out of courts by fans throwing lighters and coins and stuff. And so I was, you know, kind of, you know, familiar with that a little bit, not too familiar, but a little. But it was, you know, I guess, in the NBA, from the NBA standards, yeah, so those. Philly's, yeah. Boston. Yeah.
So, toughest fan base. And how did you feel when you bust their ass finally?
Me, Utah, it was so loud. Ooh, when I first came in the league, because it was Stockton and Malone. It was loud in Utah. Mm-hmm. And they had a little rivalry, you know, with Karl Malone and Timmy. And so they didn't like each other. It was like big. And they were loud. Sacramento Kings, when I first came in the league, with the bells, you know, right behind the bench with Mike Bibby and C-Webb and Doug Christie. They had a crew. They were really good. And they were loud in Sac. Golden State was always one of my favorites, because I always said that even when they were bad, it was still packed. The arena was still loud. And then I'll say Dallas, because of the Texas rivalry and because we play each other so many times in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was actually going to say some of the same. Sacramento was unbelievable back in the days when they had Pager making those threes, and they had a great team. It's actually unfortunate that they didn't win a championship. I thought they deserved one. They had an incredible run there with C-Webb, with Vlade. They had a great team. And yeah, when they made a run and they had their cowbells literally right behind Nelly's.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't hear a thing in there. Exactly. That was an amazing atmosphere. When the Warriors beat us in 07, what we talked about, my MVP year, that was an incredible atmosphere for an NBA. And then, I would say the Spurs, when I remember that year in 06 when we played you guys in game 7.
I'm loud.
In the afternoon, I'm laying down for my nap. I just had my pasta. I'm feeling good. All of a sudden, you know, we stayed at that, was it a Marriott back then, right on the Riverwalk. Hearing, go Spurs, go. Like loud the whole time. I was, what is happening? So we looked out, and all the guides on their little boats there, they had these megaphones.
Right.
And they drove by our hotel, and every 10 minutes, the guides were yelling, go Spurs, go. The entire time. So I was like, I don't think we're going to nap today. This is intense. So, I mean, we had some great games, and some of my best games are against the Spurs. Or said at the interstate rivalry. That was amazing, and they had amazing fans, passionate fan base. So those were some great games.
I would say Detroit.
Detroit was
good.
We would go Detroit to dinner, or we would go to the movies, and when we come out of, either they're standing outside the restaurant. Or they're standing outside the movie theater, and everyone is together yelling, Detroit basketball, the whole street. Like, and they followed us all the way to the hotel. That was before we got to the arena. And then we got to the arena, and it was on.
Detroit
was
crazy.
They had a crazy
speaker, too. The speaker.
Yeah, they announced, yeah.
Detroit basketball on the sideline.
he was real cool and like hip. And like,
the speaker was crazy, but you're right. When we played him in the finals, it was loud.
He was like, Chauncey, Phillips. And he was loud. And I was like, and he held it for a long time. You had the ball, like, you going to stop saying his name? You know what I'm saying? Like, you still saying, we got offense now. So that blew me when I first got in the league. I was like,
Detroit,
what?
Yeah. Detroit. That's right.
Detroit. Man.
Basketball.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
So I'm a style guy, right? I think I am anyway. And each one of us have our own personal styles. What was you guys' personal style and why? Like, I dressed at times like I was going to the game, like it was a runway. Okay. How did you dress to the game? Was it like you was going to work? Did you want to be business attire? Like, what was the thought? Was it even a thought? I know Timmy didn't really have too much. Was it even a thought in like what you put on when you walked to the arena?
Not until the dress code kind of changed and the NBA kind of put their foot down as far as, you know, stop with a certain, you know, style or too many, you know, chains and stuff, you know, the NFL jerseys. It was like, there was some stuff going on that it was just not a good look for our league. So the NBA just, okay, you got to go to the game with a suit. Yeah. So I was like, all right, well, I guess I got to make some suits because I only have one or something. So it was like, so that was kind of when it changed. You go to the games and you dress nicely and then you go, you know, with a suit and you pick the suit. But
so it's just because the NBA
just because of that, not because of anything. I would have happily at the end of my career, I ended up going with sweatsuits and that was it, you know, comfortable, happy, you know, great, and not too much thought into it. I'm very easygoing when it comes to that. You know, I've always, you know, I just don't really care too much about, you know, looks so much. And even I debate that with my wife, and I didn't care too much about
every day. How
you look, and I was like, it doesn't matter. Nobody's gonna remember tomorrow what you wore yesterday.
Right.
But it's a feel good thing. It's a very personal thing, and I get that.
Yeah.
You know, I respect that. You know, it's
you
not
said
a,
that to a woman.
I know. Silly. But it's, you know, it's like, I mean, obviously you're not going to change anyone. But at the same time, it's like, all right, there's got to be a happy medium where, you know, there's times where you should care about, you know, like this weekend here, right? There's a couple outfits. It's like, all right, I got a couple outfits.
You put thought into your
outfits? A little bit, yeah. Even I talked a little bit. For Saturday night.
For Saturday night,
I contacted finally a stylist. It's like, what do you think? Maybe you suggested this. I'm like, all right.
Did you have the stylist number in your phone already, or did you?
No. It was a stylist that we worked with, a photo shoot that we did with one of the magazines. Like, that woman did a good job.
They were.
So we contacted her and she seemed nice. She seemed nice. She had good taste.
We're getting to the end. And so one of the questions I wanted to ask you guys, because at one point we all came in, obviously we're rookies, and then we got to become veterans. As a veteran, how would you have handled rookie Pal and Tony and Dirk?
You know, as we have gone through this journey and process of being young and rookies and unexperienced and having veterans and kind of looking up to them and kind of looking for guidance, really, and mentorship and support, really, at times, because you just don't know, right? You have so much adrenaline, you want to do so well, but you have no fucking clue. So... it was just, you know, kind of what I have veterans say. It's okay. It's going to be okay. You're
support.
You're pat in the back. You're very talented. You're going to do great. Just keep working. Things will come. Just keep putting in the work. It's okay. You know,
good vets.
Yeah. For the most part, I did. Yeah.
We talk about closes. You know, when I first came in the league, I didn't have the money to buy suits. You know, it was like expensive. You wanted to have the nice ones, a lot of suits. And so Bruce Bowen, he took me to a store and bought all my suits.
Mm, good vet.
Yeah. David Robinson, same thing. Because, you know, my team was old school. So everybody was in suits except Timmy, obviously. But everybody was in suits. Steve Smith, Bruce Bowen, you know, David Robinson, like every single game. So that's the way that I did it. I wear the suit. And then I think the dress code helped a lot, you know. And then you know, Westbrook, everybody, you know, take it to another level. But I think it's great. Yeah, I think it's great for our league. I think it's really good for our league. And I think it's great for our image. And so me, I'm always like 50-50, you know. I like to get dressed, and sometimes, you know, you have the freedom. But I was very lucky that I had great veterans in my team.
This is a question that we're asked all the time. What's next, right? We're done with the game. Obviously, we're sitting here and we're, you know, we're on the eve of, you know, getting to the Hall of Fame, our Hall of Fame jackets. But what is next, Dirk? Like, what is it that Dirk wants to do and accomplish?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I'm sort of in this in-between phase where I'm trying a lot of things, traveling a lot, and see where I end up sticking. But honestly, I think I will stick around basketball somewhat in some fashion. I'm not sure what position that is. I'd love to work with younger, talented kids like my coach Holger did that for me, and that mentorship and what he's meant for me for a long, long time. So that would be really cool, interesting to give back and, you know, teach somebody what I know or what I've learned in my experience. So I think that's somewhere in the future. But it's also good now for me to try other things and learn stuff about businesses and do some small investments and just learn that stuff that I was so locked in for these 20 years. Man, I didn't even want to hear none of the other stuff. I always let everybody else handle everything. And now these last 4 years have been super cool for me to dip in other things. And I just opened up a restaurant in DFW Airport. It's just small little things, adventures that I also use as a learning curve. And but I mean, eventually, it's natural to stick around basketball in some fashion. So,
Val,
yeah, I think similar.
Now,
yeah,
what's next?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's the same as Dirk, and I think from what I've seen from you guys as well, it's kind of exploring. Taking some chances, kind of having fun with certain projects, learning from the mistakes, from the journey, and surrounding yourself with a good team of people that can, you know, execute and complement. As we, you know, we've been so tied up, right, with a certain lifestyle for so long. We deserve a little, you know, flexibility, the ability to enjoy certain things, be with our families. But at the same time, as Dirk was also saying, just also, you know, share the knowledge, share what you learn, kind of pass it on, pay it forward. Those things are important, I think, to me. And in a way, you know, what I like to do, which is one of the things that we also talked about when we were in Houston, is also kind of like come together, you know, with others that, you know, that by joining efforts and sharing ideas and complementing and sharing passions, that we can, you know, do stuff together, you know, which probably will be a bigger deal and a bigger impact than if we did it on our own. So, you know, that's where I'm at.
Tony, you're into a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
Yeah, but
we don't have that much time left. All your stuff.
My parents, they always told me to prepare, you know, that a career is not going to be long. And so I always had that in mind. And so very early in my career, I decided to do a meeting with Magic Johnson. And so I talked with Magic and I asked him, you know, what kind of advice you can give me, you know. And so he told me, build your network now. As you playing, because when you're gonna retire, nobody calls you back, you know. Mm. And so that's what I did, you know. During my career, I was like going to meetings and meeting CEOs, because we have access to so many people when we're playing, because everybody wants to hang out with us while we're playing, you know, and share our experiences and stuff like that. So that's exactly what I did, you know. I decided to, you know, give back to my country and invest in basketball. I'm very animated about giving back and helping the young generation. So that's why I bought the basketball team and women's team academies, and now doing like you know, in a vineyard, you know, wine and champagne. And I love it just to, like you said, you know, you're discovering now, but it's awesome. And I'm a very curious person and I like to do other stuff. And so it's been, I love it. I really didn't feel like a lot of athletes. They say like 95% of athletes, when they retire, they feel like they're dying, you know, because for their whole life, they tell us what to do and where you have to be and stuff like that. Me, I was super happy when I retired. I had one more year left in my contract when I retired. And I called Michael and I was like, you know what, I don't want to do my last year. I'm ready for the next chapter. And everything was set up. But thanks to my parents to prepare me like that. So I didn't really feel like I didn't know what I wanted to do, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, like, that's the way my parents prepared me.
Yeah. Do you remember the conversation we had when you were in Charlotte? I remember it. I don't know if you do. Before
about,
a game.
With the referees and we can't play defense anymore? Or?
Well, no? Outside of that, I was, you was like, this is
we
it.
We're going to be in the Hall of Fame together. This is it. That's right.
You said, this is it. Yes. And I was like, yeah, this is it. And I was like, once you retire so we could be in the Hall of Fame together. Yeah,
exactly.
And,
yes.
I said that you had some extra money on the table. So I appreciate you. So Tony and I both are in the wine industry. And speaking of that, I wanted to share a cheers with my brothers as we enter the Hall of Fame.
Let's do it.
I have my
start the weekend all right. Help,
there you go.
this is my new sparkling, my family sparkling Pinot Noir from California.
Talk to us.
Yeah, this is a lot of people. This is new, so you guys will be one of the first ones to try this. All right, let's ask for the sound.
Here you go, lads.
There we go.
Thank you, there.
Thank you, guys. Tell us a little bit about it. What we got here, bud?
What are we smelling? What are we smelling here?
Interview almost on.
Tell me about the aroma.
It's real light on the nose. So this is the first time we did a collab. We did a collab with this these wine growers called Under the Wire. And so if you see them here, it says Wade and Under the Wire. Mm-hmm. And we got a chance to walk the vineyards, you know, learn about the grapes, learn about the vineyard. Mm-hmm. Because we really wanted to get into this world, not champagne, but sparkling. And so we did a beautiful collab with them. And this is our first try into sparkling. I think we did a pretty good job at doing it, but we wanted to always show what California can do. And so this is our California sparkling. So to everybody out there, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for being on the podcast. Everybody.
Tony, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
Hey, good to see y'all. Hey. Hall of Famers.
Yes, sir.
We did that shit.
We did it.
You know what I mean? Thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.